Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, MidwayUSA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. When you get over there, check out their Heat Boost line. Been using that. Temperatures when we were down in Ohio the last time was down into the 20s. And that stuff is like a furnace. Like walking in with it is a bad idea. When you put your hands in your pockets, take them out, adjust your bow, do all of your stuff, put them back in there, super warm. It just kind of holds the heat in. Really great stuff. I've been using the Saskatoon line. Great stuff. Can't speak any more highly of it. I do like their other stuff. And for the Patreon giveaway this quarter, they're giving away the Fairbanks. So that's like that Holton set that I really like. It's just that. One more. So that Holton set is the midweight and the Fairbanks is the heavyweight. So they're giving away a set of bibs and a set of, and a jacket. So, waterproof, you know, Sherpa lined, windproof, freaking awesome stuff. And, you know, they're giving it away to someone who supports the show. You know, we don't work with anybody that doesn't give back to the Patreons. And, you know, for us, Patreon is a crowdfunding for creators. Patreon help us run this show, do things like our Patreon hunt. You know, all of the things that we do couldn't be done without the help of the Patreon. And we're building a community through Marco Polo and the Facebook group and things like that. So, if you want to check that out, go to patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. Really helps us out. We get entered in to win some great stuff like that. Another thing that we're doing, working with Spartan Forge. Spartan Forge is artificial intelligence for the deer woods. And they also now have online mapping. So not just the app, but you can go on your PC and you can do the mapping. The mapping is free, but the prediction, all that stuff, is something that you got to pay for. But I mean, it's kind of invaluable looking at what time to be in the woods. Like if you're picking a day, if you're looking at the weather, if you're looking at the moon, all of that stuff is on there. And been really paying attention to it now because we're coming into that second rut as far as what days to kind of put aside to be in the woods. And again, SpartanForge.ai, and you can use code BOWHUNTER to save 25%. And we give away one of those yearly subscriptions as well. And working with Lucky Buck, Lucky Buck gives away a tub of their mineral, or if you can't use that, some of the food plot seed. And we had kind of like a record book year for our property in the UP. Now, coincidence, we're just using the Lucky Buck this year, but five different bucks were taken off of our property where it's usually one, and then we see a couple different ones. So pretty interesting, but somewhat of a proof of concept there with the Lucky Buck. You know, our friends at Zinger Fletchings, they always give away a test pack of their fletchings. And you know, I've been shooting them for 2 years now, and they just keep getting better. The first ones were a little loud, you know, go back, listen to that podcast, but doing quite a bit of testing and good things over there. I don't know if they're out yet, but the 3.0s fly better than any that I've shot yet, and I really enjoy those. So Zinger Fletchings, you know, they keep giving us some fletchings to give away. And then we're also working with adjustable red dot. So Frank's using that. My dad's using one of those. And we're going to be giving away a bow, a fully set up bow with one of the adjustable red dots here this quarter. We usually try to give a bow away every year, each quarter. And this quarter, like I say, I think we're going to do one of the Bear archery. It's going to be set up just basically like mine. It's not going to be the Alaskan. I think it's the Resurgence or something like that. But talking with them over at Bear, it's basically the same bow. It's just not touted as their Legend series, but it comes as a ready to hunt package. So it'll have all the stuff and be easy to set up, but we're going to throw that adjustable red dot on there for you. So you can check that out at, like I say, patreon.com/ Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, like 17 cents a day, really helps us out. Get entered to win some great prizes. You know, get an invite to the Patreon hunt for next year. But, you know, if that's not your thing, not a big deal. Just tell someone else about the podcast. This podcast is a really good, you know, it's nice to see someone give back to veterans, to something bigger than themselves. You know, with these companies, these companies, they make all this money, they do all this stuff. Where's that going? And you know, Chris Hamm with HHA started a nonprofit, HHA USA, to give back to veterans with the Honor Flight and things like that. So this podcast, you think you're going to really enjoy it. Really good message here from Chris. And as always, thanks for listening. Hey, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And we got a returning guest here, Chris Hamm from HHA USA. You might think of him as the bow sight guy, right? You know, probably one of the first, at least for me, thinking of the first adjustable single pin sight. I mean, I remember seeing them, seeing the prices on them and saying, oh, man, I don't know. And then, I mean, I can tell you I was in a Bass Pro Shop on vacation down in Florida, and I found one of the original HHA optimizers on the clearance rack for like $50, and I was like, I have to have this. And so that came home with me in my carry-on and strapped to the old PSE Sprint many, many, many moons ago. And so, like I say, this is the one of the men in the family behind that technology. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the bow hunting side of it and products and stuff like that. But Chris has kind of like taken all that and spun it into a bigger mission with his HHA USA and his podcast and some of that other stuff. So we'll get into that. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing good. I'm just sitting here looking outside. We're hosting Thanksgiving, so I'm taking a couple days off from rifle hunting here. I told my wife it was buck only until after Thanksgiving, because I didn't really want want to burden her with helping me package up a deer. So I didn't score during rifle season our first 3 days of the, or actually, yeah, first three nights of the season. So taking a few days break for Thanksgiving holiday, and then I'll be back after it on Friday with the rifles. And then we can actually fill our rifle tag with during muzzleloader season as well. And then you can use a bow there as well. So if I'm not fortunate enough to connect with a buck with a gun here by Sunday, I'll be back out with the bow and trying to put some more meat in the freezer. So
we had this discussion with our last guest, because right now it's rifle season here in Michigan as well. You know, for a guy who has such a rich bow hunting tradition and a bow hunting company, and you know, the people you surround yourself with are obviously going to be bow hunters, and you know, those are the people that you're gonna gravitate to and doing all of these archery shoots and things like that. How do you feel, or like, what is the idea behind, like, do you have a conflict of interest, or do you feel conflicted going out with a rifle, or is that just part of the tradition there in Wisconsin?
No, I'm glad you asked, because it's only been in the last probably 3 or 4 years that I've gotten back into rifle hunting. I mean, I did it a little bit as a kid, but not much. I was definitely hardcore archery for the first, you know, probably 20 years that I hunted. And then I think back probably 2010, 2011. I had an unsuccessful archery season. I'm like, you know what? I just want to get some meat in the freezer. So took my dad's 30-06 and went out to the farm and shot a small buck and was able to have some venison for the winter. And then pretty much gave up gun hunting for the better part of a decade. And it was back in 2019, my late father, Harry Ham, he was the one that started HHA. So he passed away in July of 2019. And I had that fall, I had a buck that I had on the farm for, I think it was the second year, but he ended up being 153-inch 10-pointer. And I chased that buck nonstop from September until the middle of November. I had 6 encounters with him, could not get him within bow range. And one of the things, and I mean, this is one of my faults, I guess, is that, you know, being in the outdoor industry, in the archery industry, you want to be that guy that can put that success photo up on Instagram or put it in your catalog or put it on my booth and say, hey, my product works. I use it myself. Well, I hadn't been that guy for a lot of years. And so I put a lot of maybe unnecessary pressure on myself to be an archery only person. And so that year, I just told myself, you know what? I want this deer. If I get him with a gun, so be it. And I actually went into that weekend of opening of rifle season thinking it was going to be kind of bittersweet if I did get him, because it wasn't with archery equipment. And the specific gun that I used was a 30-06 that we joke around our family and around the office that it's called the Bad Debts gun. We had a dealer back in the early 90s down in the Chicagoland area that had gone out of business, owed us some money, but was basically inventory rich and cash poor. And so instead of getting any kind of monetary settlement from him, our sales rep went in and essentially said, well, can I get a gun from you? So he grabbed this Winchester 30-06 with a Tascal pronghorn scope on it, and that became forever known as the Bad Debts gun around the Ham family. And so I was able to shoot that buck opening night of our rifle season 3 years ago, and that really, it was special, you know, being that, you know, I just lost my dad 4 months prior to that, was able to harvest that buck with his gun. And I actually scoped myself in the process, so I didn't have a lot of pictures of it. I shot it right at closing time, so my cousin took a few pictures, you know, in the dark, and you can see this big kiss between my eyes where I had scoped myself. And my dad had done that about 30 years prior when he was sighting the gun in. So it was just a really, really cool, probably one of the coolest hunts that I've ever had, even though it wasn't an archery hunt. And since then, it's really kind of relit my fire just for hunting in general. And so kind of a long answer to your question, but no, I love archery hunting, but I just love being out in the outdoors, and I love venison and being able to provide that for members of my family that don't hunt. So I have no reservations at all about rifle hunting. So
from that standpoint, like, what would you say to guys that are, I feel like the last 5 years for sure, but maybe you could go 10 years, the advent of social media has created this environment where public versus private, bow versus crossbow versus traditional versus, you know, it's all this hunter infighting. And I think for guys, and especially guys who are maybe new to hunting, or they have these ideas of what they see it has to be like this, and kind of like what you said, this undue pressure. Talk about like when you were a kid growing up hunting in a family with an archery company, right? Did you feel that pressure even from before social media because of that brochure type, the hunting shows and all that?
I don't think so. I think the social media definitely ramped it up because everything is so much more readily available. I mean, it's in your face. I mean, if the Drury shoot a buck last night, we know about it on DeerCast tomorrow, if not the same nights. I mean, everything is so instant now. And I don't think I felt that pressure so much as a kid. I think it was just more as our company got successful, I felt like I had to be that guy. My faith has had a lot to do with kind of my change in the way that I look at life in general. But I mean, when that happened 6 or 7 years ago, those things just weren't important to me anymore. And the funny thing is that I've had more success in the woods in the last 6 or 7 years putting deer on the wall than I did in the first 30 years that I hunted, because it's not important to me anymore. And I feel that, God sees that. He knows where my heart's at now. And so he has rewarded me more, because now I just essentially just give him all the glory for the success that I have. And I don't care if I'm on our booth, if I'm in our catalog, or if I'm on Instagram, it doesn't matter to me. So.
Yeah. I think guys get so caught up in what other people think that they forget about how they're supposed to feel inside. When you loose that arrow or pull that trigger or whatever, you made that decision. And I feel like that's cliche because it gets said so many times, but then, you can't compare yourself against everyone else because everybody else's scenario is different, whether it be time or money. Some people have a lot of time, but they don't have any money, so they can go out and find these deer and spend all the time in the world. And other guys have all the money, but they don't have time, so they buy a hunt or they go out and shoot the first thing that they can with a rifle. And everybody else is somewhere in between. And some people are better, but some people are luckier. What do they say? Like, comparison is the thief of joy. It's like you just have to enjoy being out there and getting that opportunity and enjoy being successful. And what you deem as success, is always going to be a personal thing. So I think the social media has just kind of put everything out in front of everybody so much more that it makes you feel bad about yourself. And it's like, you have to think about that when you're out there by yourself, enjoying the sunrise, the foxes that you see, or the turkeys coming down from roost, or, all the things that you wouldn't get to see otherwise. Success comes in many, many, many more forms than just antler size,
No, and it's unfortunate. I mean, we use social media to promote our business. I use it primarily to, promote my nonprofit and to share my faith with people. And I mean, unfortunately, in the filtered Instagram world that we live in, I think that stuff was always present to some extent, but I think social media and the advent of all that has really just thrown gas on a fire that was already there. But with a lot of the rifle seasons opening up, I would see that on my social media, the Orange Army's coming out. And it's like, come on, guys, we're all hunters at the end of the day, whether we're going with a bow, with a gun, with a crossbow, if we're hunting over bait, if we're hunting over food plots, if we're up in the Northwoods and there's not anything but forage for miles around. I mean, the bottom line is that we're all outdoorsmen, and there's too many outside forces that are trying to take down hunting. We can't infight, in my opinion. It's totally counterproductive to our industry and to our sport.
Yeah, the infighting is very difficult. And, I feel like we here on the podcast are just as guilty because, we cater to bow hunters. We really, I mean, that's our passion, right? And so I don't have the same appreciation for a crossbow hunt for many reasons, and I don't think that there's not a place for it. But I think like a lot of it opens up a lot of room for bad ethics, and marketing has a you know, a lot to do with that, where you got a crossbow and they're saying, well, you can hit a balloon at 100 yards, and that's their marketing. And then people think it's just like a gun. You don't have to sight it in. You don't have to shoot it. And like I say, we're just as guilty as that as possible. But, you know, it is got to be a hunt your hunt type thing. And the fact that it gets those people out in the woods, you know, we have to respect that too. You know, that's, if that's how they're comfortable hunting, and that's getting them out in the woods, and, you know, they're putting money towards conservation and all of the things that go for our passions as well. You know, it helps to fund that. Like, you kind of got to step back and say, you know, we're all in this together, right?
That's the hope. Unfortunately, if you go on social media, it looks like the whole thing's coming, you know, to a screeching halt, or is crashing down around us if you get caught up in too many of those threads. And I've tried not to do that in the last few weeks, and I just shake my head and put my phone down. So,
well, and I think that's the way that you have to do it, right? Is, you know, there is, you know, obviously the old adage where, you know, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. But there's this troll mentality now that you've got with the internet, where everybody, you know, because they can't get punched in the mouth or whatever, they just say whatever they want and bash other hunters and all of that. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, tonight I'm going to go out and hunt, and I'm contemplating bringing my longbow for the first time. And I think I've got a good opportunity to shoot a doe. But I've almost wanted to do like a social experiment, right? I would love to shoot a 3-point or something with this longbow, and then do a nice grip and grin and with it, and say, man, you know, shot this buck, I've been after him all year or whatever. And then wait for the comments, and then post that it was with the longbow or something at, you know, 6 yards on the ground, and then see how that changes, right? Because I think that there's a big, you know, when you see the context behind everything, I think it changes people's minds. And it's like, why can't you just be happy no matter what? Why does it have to be, it's okay because it was, you did it this way, or, but I think it would be like a good experiment to do from that standpoint, because there's so many people that are so happy for people with their first deer, with their first buck, their first deer with traditional equipment, like whatever. But then you do that same thing with, on opening day of rifle season, and you'll get ostracized, right?
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. I mean, I'm fortunate enough. I've got 160 acres of private land that I own. That's where I do all my hunting. So I'm able to, and I don't want to say grow my own deer, but I mean, I can manage the deer herd to some extent. I have neighbors that, for the most part, participate in QDM, and so I don't travel anywhere else around the country to hunt. Everybody's like, well, you own an archery company, why don't you go to Iowa? Why don't you go to Kansas? It's like, well, I've got 140 to 160 inch deer running around 20 minutes from my house. I'm a homebody. I like to stay home. But my cousin, they hunt on our relations land just to the south of us. And Saturday morning, this, you know, a few days ago, my cousin shot his best buck to date. It was a 14 or 15 inch 8-pointer. It was like a 2.5-year-old buck. Would I have shot that buck if it came out? No. Because, I mean, I see that deer and it's like, man, he's going to be a stud in a couple of years. But was I upset when I got that text from my other cousin saying that his brother shot a deer? Absolutely not. I was ecstatic for him, because, I mean, it was his best buck to date. There's plenty of other 2-year-old bucks running around. There's going to be more big deer. So, I mean, you have to, as sportsmen, we have to love each other. We have to embrace each other's, you know, opinions, even if we don't agree with them. We can't be so polar opposite of each other that, well, if you're not going to do it my way, that's not cool. It is, I don't know. It's much easier said than done, but we need to be a lot more understanding. I mean, you talk about going out with your longbow. For all you know, you've got terminal cancer and you're not going to be here January 1st. Mm-hmm. If the guy on the other end of the social thread doesn't know that, he could tear you down. You could be like, dude, I got 4 weeks to live. This was the greatest hunt of my life. It's probably the last deer I'm ever going to shoot. Did that guy know that? No. He's probably going to feel like a heel if he heard the whole story.
Right. And so for you, from a company standpoint, like how, I mean, is there a way that you can kind of change the dynamic from a marketing standpoint, or is it just big buck sell? So that's what we're going to do.
I mean, I've thought about that from time to time. It's like, how do I use our voice as an industry leader to change that narrative? I don't know if we can. I mean, you look at our social media, and I mean, for the most part, and I'm generalizing here, maybe I shouldn't, but I mean, people want to see those big bucks, those big elk, those trophy animals. So that's a lot of what we post on our social media, but we'll post other pictures that like the three-pointer you talked about. And so we try to mix that stuff in there. So maybe I think we're doing it in a subtle way. It's not all just, you know, 180s and up, you know, we don't have a limit on what we put on our social media. So, I've been hunting since I was 12 years old. My brother's been at it since he was 12, and he just turned 60. So, I mean, we have a lot of years of hunting between us. You know, my dad's no longer with us, but I mean, the three of us, you've got over 100 years in the woods between the three owners of the company. So, and we always haven't been fortunate to be able to chase after a deer for 3 years. I mean, back when I was a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s, I mean, if we saw a buck in the woods, that was a win. If dad could shoot that three pointer, that little six pointer, that was a great season. And that really shouldn't change just because the times have changed. So,
yeah. And you're
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You had mentioned your property there, and you had had you've already harvested a buck early with your bow this year. And I got some questions about that. So, like, you're 160 acres of land. Like, how does that set up? And like, how are you managing it with food plots and you know, water and all of these things? Like, what is your property management plan there?
So I've got a couple different friends that, you know, there's a lot of different people that are in property management, but a friend of mine, Jeff Helmers from Big Rack Trophy Products. I've known Jeff for probably 15 years. He's here in Western Wisconsin. I mean, he was doing property management 20, 25 years ago before it was the thing to do now. Thomas Milson is another good friend of mine. He used to work for Reconyx, so he's got a land management firm. Jim Vandahay, another buddy of mine from Whitetail Solutions. I've got a lot of different friends in the industry that do that kind of stuff. And so they've all been to my property and looked around and kind of given me their opinions on what they would do. And the area that I'm in, it's heavy agriculture. So it's clay soil. So crops grow well, food plots grow well. And I actually lease part of the land out for farming to one of the local farmers. So he puts hay on part of it. He's got corn on it. I've got soybeans. I've got to, you know, put in a fall blend. I've got water. I've actually got an 8-acre pond on there that we do a lot of fishing in. So then there's a smaller pond on my North 80. So I've got water. I've got food. I've got a sanctuary. I mean, I'm the only one that hunts the land. So, I would say that probably I might put boots on 30% of it during the course of a season. And that's preseason and everything, maybe 40% at most. I mean, I don't really walk around, obviously, in my farm fields, don't go on the pond much. And I've got a sanctuary set aside that's probably a solid, probably 30 acres of it that I don't go in unless I have to go in there to retrieve a deer. So, I mean, the deer are they're very relaxed. They don't know they're being hunted for the most part. So, and I'm not an expert by any means. I've been bow hunting for, you know, gosh, 35 years now and made a lot of mistakes. And so, just learning from other people. And that's kind of the basic layout of my land and kind of what I have on it. So.
But so the deer that you shot, you said you've been watching him for 3 years or so, right?
Yep.
And it's something that's just foreign to me because we hunt, you know, pressured public land all over, bouncing all over. So I'm very much an opportunist as, you know, you go into a spot and, you know, you might see deer early season or you've been kind of watching them for one season, but I'm not at the level where, you know, I'm keeping tabs on these deer for years and years and years. So these deer, are they pretty much like a Chris Ham? Are they homebodies? Or during the rut, are they moving all over still? And your neighbors are doing the same thing. They saw that deer and they passed him as well. What is that like for a guy who doesn't have that? We'll call it a luxury, but, you know, doesn't have the ability to kind of keep tabs on these deer.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, I mean, this is the first deer in my history of hunting that I've actually been able to have, you know, year after year history on. I've killed probably three or four deer that I've had on trail camera, but they typically show up that summer or maybe at most like the previous season. So I may have killed a deer that I had on camera a year before, but this is the first deer that I've had that length of history with. And I think having the bedding area that I do, I'm 99.9% sure that buck was bedded on my property for the last 3 years. And so 2 years ago, he left for about a week and a half. I lost him for the better part of 2 weeks. I think I had a picture of him on Halloween, and then it was like November 12th or 13th. He showed back up. So he was off chasing ladies for a better part of 2 weeks. And he had at that point, he had split G2s on both sides, and he had busted one of them off fighting. So when he came back, he was a little worse for the wear. But I think just knowing that, you know, and I was able to put some of the pieces of the puzzle together more after I shot the deer, because one of our neighbors, he and I are friends on social media, and he messaged me shortly after I posted. He's like, you know, it's funny. He's like, I've had that deer on camera for the last three summers, always in the dark. I could never get a daylight picture of him. And I had pictures of him going north on one of my access roads in the dark. And I would always talk to my father-in-law. He doesn't hunt, but he would always joke. He's like, what's he going over there for? He's like, you got everything. You've got food, you've got water, you've got those, you've got bedding, you've got everything. And here he was going over into that neighbor's alfalfa field, probably might've been a mile away. He was just taking a little jaunt and going around the neighborhood and then coming home to his bed. So.
And so as part of that, like land plan, how important do you think that sanctuary is, and where is that located in conjunction with like other hunting pressure, like maybe your house or your cabin or whatever, like from the deer safety? I mean, 30 acres is a pretty big sanctuary, right? I mean, there's guys, you know, that listen to the podcast, and even like that Mike Lindahl from Domain, he's over there in Wisconsin, and he's hunting a 4-acre property or something like that. So a 30, yep. 30 acre stay out area is pretty significant. But how is that situated on the property as far as like based on your access, other hunter pressure, all that stuff?
It's nice because I mean, I can access it from three sides. I've got roads on three sides, and then the neighbor on the side that I don't have access to hardly hunts at all. Him and his dad and his brother hunt opening weekend of rifle season, and that's it. So I mean, they've got an 80 as well, and I don't have any dwellings on my place at all. So there's no human traffic on there other than a farmer, you know, occasionally running out there with his equipment, or me, you know, randomly checking trail cameras here and there. But so yeah, that sanctuary is I don't even have to walk past it. It's basically on the far end of my big field where I do most of my hunting and have a lot of my food in. And so it was strange last night. I didn't see hardly any deer last night, but the first two nights of rifle season, I think I had 20 deer in my field on Saturday night, and I had 14 on Sunday night. I mean, they literally come out of the woodwork because they know, first of all, they know that they're safe on my property. And then once rifle season starts and the pressure comes from the other properties, they know to come in there as well. So, that sanctuary is a big part of, I think, why I've been able to hold deer and hold quality deer over the last handful of years. So,
and how did that hunt shape up? Because was it like the opening weekend of bow season, or it was fairly early?
Yeah, it was about, so our season started on the 17th, Saturday the 17th, and I killed that deer on the 28th, which was a week, basically a week and a half into the season. And I had missed that deer in this exact same spot in January. I shot right underneath him. And that was very close to his bedding area. So, I had a soft sided blind in there at that point, and I'm a redneck guy. So I've got redneck blinds on my property. So I put a redneck blind up there this summer, kind of changed the layout of that food plot a little bit just to kind of close the distance. It was about a 60 yard shot across there. And the way that I did it this year, I actually planted corn 15 yards out into the field, put my redneck right at the front of that. So now I've only got a 45 yard shot across the plot. And he came out in that very spot. And I killed that deer probably 10 steps from where I missed him in January. So it was pretty obvious that that was his home range. He came out an hour and 15 minutes before dark. I mean, he came out at 5 after 6 on a Wednesday night. There was just two other fawns out in the field with him. I mean, he was out there grazing in my beans like it was July.
So he just felt super comfortable, and it was, you know, just another day for him.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So, and what'd that deer score?
Gross 169 in 5 A's.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that was 2.5 months ago, or pushing 2 months ago now, and I'm still in pinch me mode when I look at his rack. But, you know, I took him to my taxidermist the next day, and he's got the cape. I won't get the mount back for probably a year or so, but I've got the rack home with me, and every day I go out there and look at it, and I just shake my head. I mean, he's got so much mass and so much character. He's just a cool deer. I nicknamed him Houdini because he showed up in 2018 as a two-year-old with those split twos. So he was a really distinctive deer. Well, then 2019, that buck that I talked about earlier, he was the dominant buck on the property. My theory is that he basically kicked Houdini off there and said, get out of here. And then once I shot that buck, then Houdini moved back in 2020. So he basically disappeared for a year, came back in 2020. And then it was three seasons of chasing after him, and finally sealed the deal here in September. So
shooting a big deer like that on your own property, let alone anywhere, how does that change like your expectations? Because being your property, right, is like you know, okay, so we have the potential, you know, we've got the genes, we've got everything that, you know, these deer can mature to this level. But now here you are, you know, back out with a rifle in the same season, and it's like, you know, some guys are like, well, I got to shoot one bigger than what I shot the last time, or it's got to have, you know, some sort of characteristic. And we just talked about, you know, hunt your hunt in the 3 points of the world. So how does your outlook change on deer hunting after shooting a big one like that?
It's funny because this is the first time in 35 years that I've been asked that question, because I mean I've got a couple decent bucks on the wall, but nothing like this. So it's like, yeah, it was weird. I did not set foot into the woods hunting in the month of October. My wife and I celebrated our anniversary. We took a little vacation and just got all my yard work done. And I didn't hunt in October. And I was just kind of soaking it all in. And it was a little bittersweet because I've got, you know, I run CuddyLink cell cams, and every time I get those pictures, it's like, oh, I wonder if Houdini's there. Well, now he's dead. And it's like, it's almost like I lost a friend. It's like, where do I go from here? And I've got a pretty nice 8 point that in a normal year, had Houdini not been around, I would have shot this buck. And I actually passed him up two nights prior to getting Houdini. So that buck, to my knowledge, is still running around. I had pictures of him about 10 days ago. He's at least 3. He might be a 4-year-old 8. I mean, a good deer. I would shoot that deer any day of the week with a bow or a gun. And then I had a 9 pointer show up right after I shot my buck. He moved in literally a week later. He's at least 3. He might be 4. He's got no brow tines, but he's a really, really wide deer. He's probably 18 wide, I would say. And so either one of those deer, in a heartbeat, I would shoot him. And so I haven't really, even though I've got 100 and, you know, almost a Boone and Crockett deer to my possession now, it hasn't changed my expectations, because I mean that could be a once in a lifetime deer for me. I mean, let's be honest, it took me 35 years to get one. Granted, things have changed in the last handful of years. You know, I'm stacking the cards in my favor to maybe get another one like that, but if I don't, I'm fine. I would, if I can get a 3.5-year-old buck on the ground every year, that's kind of my benchmark. I've shot enough 2-year-olds that I'd like to see a deer get to at least 3 years old. And if I can do that, that would make me happy. But it's not like, well, I'm not going to shoot anything unless it's 170 plus. Now I'm not that guy. And And there are people out there like that. It's just, you know, everything's all is all relative. If I had thousands of acres in four or five different states that I was hunting, well, yeah, maybe it'd be a different story. But being where I'm at, that's kind of my mentality going forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, you say that you didn't hunt at all in the month of October. You know, I've had this conversation with one of my buddies who's, you know, now he's tagged out. He tagged out, I think, opening day of our rifle season. He killed a buck with a bow. And, you know, once you do that, you know, if you're not hunting out of state or whatever, you're done. And, you know, something that's such a big portion of your life, you know, of your year, of like your consciousness, and you're just like, you know, what do I do now? And I've got another buddy who actually killed three bucks, I think, in 6 days. He killed a buck in Kentucky and then came home and killed two bucks in 2 days here in Michigan, and he's tagged out. And he was just texting me today saying, hey, I think in December I'm going down to Indiana because I don't have anything to hunt here. So it's just odd. So, I mean, it is interesting where, you know, what John Browning says, you know, guns are the great equalizer, right? You know, but now you got to show a little bit of restraint, or it's got, you know, because once you pull that trigger and you're already tagged out, you're done. That's it. End of season.
Yeah. And thankfully, you know, we can hunt with our bows during our gun season here. So with our gun season and then the muzzleloader, I'll have an opportunity either with a rifle here before Sunday, or, you know, get out with my bow during muzzleloader and see what happens. And I have doe tags to fill too. I mean, having 160 acres, I definitely want to put a little venison in the freezer and be a good, land conservationist and take a couple does too. So I definitely have some hunting left in front of me between now and ATA. So
yeah, but you got a lot of other stuff going on. Let's talk about your other your nonprofit project that you're working on, the HHA USA. So what's going on with that? What's the story behind that?
Well, that, I think we talked about that a little bit on the podcast last year, but I mean, that's a nonprofit that I started back in late 2019. I'm not a veteran, did not serve, but I have a huge heart for our veterans and service members and our first responders. And so, just interacting with primarily veterans and then some, you know, law enforcement, first responders as well through our military discount program over the last decade or so, I've made some friendships and just heard a lot of good stories and seen a lot of the positive benefits of archery in that community, you know, especially with folks that are dealing with PTSD. And so, and then I also got started as a volunteer with our local Honor Flight chapter 6 or 7 years ago. Absolutely love that, working with the Honor Flight. And so that was the reason I started HHA USA, was primarily to raise money and raise awareness for our, and appreciation for our service members. And so we're just having a lot of fun here in Wisconsin doing these archery shoots. We've done a couple dozen of them now, and we've got four more planned for next year, some big events with some of our for-profit partners. So just a lot of cool stuff going on in the archery world as far as bringing veterans and first responders into it here in Wisconsin and drawing people in from around the country for the events as well.
And when you're talking about those events, like, what do those entail? Or like, you know, if somebody goes and they say, okay, well, I want to help out with the veterans or for the Honor Flight or whatever, and they see these, you know, archery shoots or whatever, what does one of those look like?
So it's going to be, for anybody that's been to a 3D shoot, it's very similar to that. You know, I joke that I take my circus to their town. So I go to an existing, you know, 3D or 3D archery club, and they open their doors to us, and we'll typically split the money, you know, the door monies for the participation fees for a 3D shoot. And it's typically a 2-day event, Saturday, Sunday, just in case we get a rain out. And then I've used a lot of my connections in the archery and the outdoor world to bring in product sponsors. So we've got Vortex Optics. We've got Matthews Bows. We've got Lacrosse Boots, Predator Camo. I mean, we've got 70 or 80 different product sponsors on our website that donate products. So then we will put on a silent auction throughout the course of the weekend as well. So it's almost like going to a 3D shoot combined with a Rocky Mountain Elk or a DU banquet or a Whitetails Unlimited, where you can bid on those items. And then the money raised from those auctions as well goes back to HHA USA. So,
okay. And so for guys who, I mean, when you say 3D shoot, Are these, I think, like when we go to Total Archery Challenge or something like that, everybody wants to know who's never been there or just kind of like has heard rumblings about it or whatever. Like, is it a competition? Did you win? That sort of thing. So what, as far as like the competitive side of this, is there anything like that?
No, that's more just bragging rights with your buddies or whoever you bring along with you. I mean, we, you know, a lot of the clubs will still hand out scorecards. Some people don't even take scorecards. They'll bring their whole family and it's just mom, dad, and the two kids out shooting money for the cause. And they're going to grab a soda and a burger before they go home and have a good day. And they've supported the veterans. And there's definitely the competitive side. And I've really seen it, especially in the, I think in the military community, as I've met more veterans, first responders, and had the opportunity to shoot with them, there's a lot of razzing that goes back and forth. And, you know, guys want to shoot better than their buddies just to have a leg up on them and to have bragging rights until the next shoot. So there is a little bit of a competitive side to it if you want, but it's definitely not a requirement. It's generally a fundraiser built around 3D archery. And if you want to score, you can, but you don't have to.
Okay. And then you've got a podcast now. Like we kind of talked about it a little bit on the last one, but you hadn't launched it yet. Talk a little bit about that and how that's going and what that's kind of centered behind.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
Yeah, so that was something that was actually born out of the pandemic. I mean, you know, March of 2020, we all got shut down. And I mean, I had 8 events scheduled for that year. And at that point, we were still doing indoor and outdoor stuff. And so I think we still ended up salvaging all 8 of our events. I think we had to push one of them from April back to August, but we still held all of our events. But, you know, here I am all fired up about the fundraising season and wanting to spread this message kind of in our first full year as a nonprofit. And 3 months in, it's like we're stuck on the couch. And so I just got thinking and actually just basically said a prayer, and it was a very selfish one, but I just asked God. I said, you know, give me a means to promote this thing without leaving my house, for as selfish as that sounds. And I had done probably maybe a dozen podcasts prior to that, just coming on as a guest, talking about our business and such. And the idea just came to me. It's like, well, why not start a podcast for HHA USA? I have conversations multiple times a week with different people, be it veterans or be it, you know, sponsors or friends, just talking about the HHA USA cause, talking about honor flight, talking about post-traumatic stress. And it's like, why not put a microphone in front of those conversations and share them with the world? And so that was kind of how that idea was born. We started it in April of 2021. So we're about a year and a half in. Not lighting the world on fire with downloads. I wish we had more, but I mean, we are making an impact. I mean, I had a gentleman that I had met just, you know, electronically through our military discount probably 7 or 8 years ago. He lives out on the East Coast. He's a veteran. He's got post-traumatic stress, loves archery. Archery has really, really helped him cope with that. And so we've stayed in touch over the years. Well, then he found out that I had a podcast last November and just basically went on a binge and listened to every episode. Now he's caught up. We have since started to have phone conversations. It wasn't just email. And then he drove out halfway across the country for one of our events last year. And it was probably one of the coolest weekends on the HHA USA circuit that I had, just being able to share that weekend with him, get to meet him in person and just kind of share his story, or share our own respective stories. And, you know, he's a man of faith as well. So it's something that I was able to make a new friend through this podcast, and now he's a big part of what we're doing and going forward. It's conversations like that and you know, those kind of things that make the podcast all worthwhile, even though we don't have millions of downloads.
And what is the the topics or the message? Who is your listener? You know, who's the podcast focused
towards?
For? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's aimed at our veteran and our first responder community. It's aimed at civilians that have a heart similar to mine that want to help out. Maybe somebody's listening that, you know, has an uncle or a brother or a spouse that was in, Vietnam, and maybe it gets them on the honor flight. So it's got kind of a broad audience. It's pretty much anybody that's passionate about the veteran, first responder, and or archery community, or a combination of those things.
Okay. And you guys are also doing a film series. I know there was a film last year at HHA, and then you've got a few different films that are being put out on your YouTube and like through social media and stuff like that. Talk a little bit about those projects.
Yeah. So that was born out of so Sam Ugel is a good friend of mine from Chase Nation here in Wisconsin. He's got a production company. They have a hunting show, streaming hunting show that they do called Chase Nation. Great guys. Sam and I connected. It's going to be, I think, 3 years ago, this past summer. And just the more conversations that I had with these veterans and first responders and hearing their stories, they were very forthright in wanting to share those. And a podcast was one means, but as Sam and I got talking about that, it's like, well, why don't we document these with an actual video? And so that was kind of where that whole idea spawned from. And so we launched the first one late last year. It debuted at the Badlands Festival at ATA. It actually took, I think, fifth place in the Badlands Festival. And we've done two films since then. The third one, or actually the fourth and final film for this year, we're just getting ready to wrap that one up and launch it before Christmas. But we basically do four films a year just to share those stories in hopes that they will change one person's life. I mean, that's why I started HHA USA. That's why I started the podcast. That's why we're doing these films, is that, you know, if we can raise millions of dollars, great. If we can send folks on hunts, get bows and arrows in their hands, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, the goal was just to change one person's life, and anything else over and above that is a bonus in my eyes.
Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to like kind of have you explain too. I feel like there are some really wolf in sheep's clothing veteran, you know, nonprofits, right? Where they have big costs for, you know, logistics and everything, and the money that actually gets down to the veterans, you know, is marginal compared to the money that's taken in for some of these you know, big name donations, you know, where it's a veterans thing. So what is the money going towards, and how is it being filtered down through to the end user, to the veteran, right?
Yeah. So we've got, if you look on our website, we've got six or eight different other nonprofits that are veteran first responder based that we filter money to. So we're kind of a middleman or a fundraising mechanism for those organizations that we're passionate about. Like I said, the whole premise of this was formed around Honor Flight was kind of our primary focus when we started out. And then to raise awareness for the 22 a day that take their lives, the first couple of years, we donated the other 22% to these other organizations that get servicemen and women out hunting and fishing. So we work with a group called Wounded Warriors in Action. They were started by an Army Ranger here from Wisconsin. They currently put on 60 to 80 events across the country every year, whether it be hunting, fishing, experiences for veterans. And I believe they work specifically with Purple Heart veterans. And so that's their niche. We work with a group called the Nystedt Foundation, started by a gentleman by the name of James Nystedt. If any of your listeners are familiar with Chuck Norris and the old Delta Force movies from the 80s, James Nystedt was one of the original Delta Force guys. And huge outdoorsman. So when he got out of the service, he just saw how beneficial being in the outdoors and hunting was for him. So he wanted to start his own organization. And so we work with those guys. Any baseball fans or Buck Commander fans, I'm good friends with Adam LaRoche. Adam's got an E3 Foundation, E3 Ranch Foundation, where he works with vets. He just had his vet hunt this weekend. So we work with Adam as well. So we distribute monies to those folks. And then, like I said, Honor Flight was kind of our big thing starting out. And when I started doing these shoots, I did them for 3 years without HHA USA. I was essentially working under our local Honor Flight chapter's 501c3. And every time we would put on a shoot, you know, we would raise anywhere from 5, 6, maybe 8 grand a weekend. And I would have this big wad of cash and checks in a Ziploc bag. And the co-founders of the Honor Flight from our chapter here live about an hour away. So we would meet halfway in between at a Subway for lunch. And we'd do the money exchange in the parking lot. And it would almost feel like an old episode of Miami Vice, you know, the drug deals going down in the parking lot. And that's a kind of a rabbit trail I'm getting off on. But I say that because one of those lunches, Jim Campbell, the co-founder, looked at me. He's like, man, if you keep this up, he said, you're going to be able to fund a full flight at some point. And he kind of laughed. And I said, well, how much is it? What is the cost to fund a full Honor Flight? And it's $70,000. And I said, well, I said, be careful what you wish for, Jim. I said, that might happen someday if we get our own organization off the ground. And we were able to make good on that promise in August. That was a goal that I had put out with our volunteers and with my board of directors when we first started, is that we're gonna fund a full Honor Flight. And so we were able to give them the big cardboard check at our first annual banquet in August. And so October of next year, HHA USA will be sponsoring a full Honor Flight out of central Wisconsin for 100 to 110 veterans to fly out to Washington, D.C. for the day and see the memorials erected in their honor. So,
yeah. And so, you know, you'd mentioned Honor Flight, and I know we talked about it on the last podcast, but for people who aren't familiar with, you know, what that is and what happens on one of those, can you kind of just explain, you know, what you're funding there?
Yeah. So Honor Flight, anybody that travels, I hear people all the time, if they're not familiar with Honor Flight, they're like, oh, that's what that was. So if you're ever traveling in an airport and you see a huge reception for, you know, there's going to be a lot of red, white, and blue flags, American flags. You're going to see a lot of older gentlemen, occasionally some women walking through with either t-shirts or polo shirts on, all the same color. Good chance that's an Honor Flight. And so back in 2004, there was a gentleman, his name was Earl Morris, and he was I believe he was a doctor's physician in one of the branches of the military. And as he started seeing more World War II vets come through his clinic, at that point, they were in their mid to late 70s, and they had just built the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. And so Earl would ask them, hey, have you been to the World War II Memorial? And 99% of them said no. So that was something that God put on Earl's heart, is that he thought, well, man, these guys are going to be, you know, their health is only going to decline as they get older. We have to put together some sort of a mission to get them out to D.C. free of charge to see this World War II Memorial. And so that's how Honor Flight was started. I believe it was 2004 or 2005. He basically was able to commandeer a private plane with some pilots that he knew, and they flew a dozen or 15 World War II vets to Washington, D.C. That was the very first Honor Flight. And fast forward to 2022, there's now, I want to say there's 136, 137 chapters across the country, Honor Flights. And they send World War II, Korea, and Vietnam vets to Washington, D.C. for the day to visit all of those memorials. It is an awesome, awesome experience. I've been fortunate enough to I've been on 6 Honor Flights now as a guardian and accompany veterans out to D.C. for the day. Just being in that civilian chair and seeing the impact that it's had on them and their families. I mean, it's hard to put into words the power of an Honor Flight.
Okay. Yeah. And so, I mean, that kind of puts it into perspective, like what you're doing, right? So not only giving money to these other organizations that are doing these great things with veterans in the outdoor space, but you're also saying, okay, well, we're going to put it on ourselves to make sure that we get these people to see the monuments. And I think that's incredible. How do people get chosen for, or how do they apply or whatever for an Honor Flight?
So honorflight.org is just that's the national website for all the chapters. So if you're anywhere in the 50 states, they just recently added an Honor Flight in Alaska and Hawaii. So I believe if all 50 states, some of the Western states that are less populated may not have a branch or a a flight in their state, but they might take you to another state. So basically any veteran of a U.S. war from World War II career, Vietnam, is eligible to go on an honor flight, and they don't have to be. One of the misconceptions is they had to have been there, you know, actually in country in combat, and that is not the case. It's serving during that conflict. So if you were in Vietnam, but you were stationed somewhere else, but you weren't in country, you're still eligible for an honor flight. So that's probably the best place to go is just honorflight.org. And then you can kind of look by your state there, and that'll funnel you into the individual chapter. Like Wisconsin, we obviously have a lot of veterans here because I think we have more chapters than any state in the country. We have 6 different honor flight chapters here in Wisconsin. So,
okay. And then what is what events do you have coming up this year for HHA USA?
So we had done, as I talked earlier, we had done 8 events in 2020. Last year, we cut back to 6. And you know, and basically we were 6 years in. We were 3 years in as a nonprofit, 6 years in doing these shoots and being a homebody, I kind of selfishly kept them all pretty close to my house. So every shoot that we had done outside of one was basically 60 minutes from where I live. And so everybody in this area is very familiar with HHA USA, what we're all about, but we started to get more emails, more posts on social media. Hey, when are you coming here? When are you coming there? So we've decided to drop our number of total shoots down to 4 in Wisconsin, but we are now branching out. We're doing a big event south of Madison, which is where Vortex is located. So we're doing an event with them at the end of April next year. And then we are doing returning to Toma, which is just outside of Sparta, where anybody that's a Matthews fan, that's where those guys are located. So that's Cranberry Country over on the kind of the southwestern part of Wisconsin. We'll be back there the weekend after July 4th, I believe. And then heading to Racine, just south of Milwaukee. They've got a great club there. And the nice thing about it is it's only 15 minutes south of Milwaukee. So we're getting more and more people that are wanting to fly in from around the country for these events. And Milwaukee is the cheapest place to fly in Wisconsin. It's only an hour from Chicago. So doing that event. And then we're also doing our hometown event here in Wisconsin Rapids. And that will also be piggybacked on with our second annual banquet that same weekend. So we're going to have our banquet Friday night, which is co-hosted by Whitetails Unlimited. And then we have our shoot here in Rapids on Saturday and Sunday. I believe that's August 18th to the 20th. So, and then there's a couple other things that are still in the works that I'm not quite ready to talk about yet. We could possibly have one event outside the state next year, and then working on a private fundraiser with some friends as well. So we've got a lot of good stuff in the works for 2023 and beyond for HHA USA.
And if that's not enough, you run a full for-profit company as well. So what's new over on the HHA sports side?
Yeah, we did something here this past summer that we haven't done in probably the better part of a decade. We did a mid-summer or mid-season release. So we've been getting a lot of demand over the last 3 or 4 years for a multi-pin.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Site, or basically a two-pin site, because that's the one argument that we get from anybody that's reluctant to switch from a multi to a single pin. What happens if the deer moves? And that's exactly what happened to me on that buck in January. I was shooting a single pin site. I was full draw on him at 20, and a younger buck saw me come to full draw, spooked. They both took off. Now he's at 40, and I just misjudged with my 20-yard pin, and I shot right underneath him. So we've got it's not new technology. I mean, there's been sights around like this for many years, but we just finally got around to making another one. But it's essentially a single pin sight with a second fiber, you know, a half inch lower than the top pin. So, and then it's got dual needles on it. So my second pin comes out to 35 yards. So now I've got basically 20 to 45 without having to adjust the sight. So that argument's kind of out the window now. And that sight just came out in July. It's called the Rise series, and it's been very, very popular for us. So we don't have anything new coming out, you know, January 1 here at ATA. That was kind of our new product for 2022 and a half, 2023. And then you may see some new stuff from us again in July if we decide to go that route. Otherwise, we're we're working on designs right now for 2023 and a half, 2024. So,
and so with the product launch in July, you know, my exposure to the industry is, you know, obviously less than yours, but even in the last 5 years, there's been an incredible change. And I feel like, you know, COVID had a lot to do with that, with, you know, not having, I think the companies had success with outside of the shows, and they said, okay, well, maybe we don't need to do this, you know, on this level and put this kind of like monetary commitment into going and setting up all these booths and all this stuff. But I feel like even in the last 3-4 years, the bows are coming out now. You know, right now we just saw Matthews drop their new bow. Hoyt's got their new bows out, and you know, your archery tags haven't even expired yet for the bow you bought this year, if you bought a new one. And so that timing of the market and when these products are coming out and stuff like that, how do you, as a company, how does the timing go into it? Like, you know, that had been a big change after, you know, 20-30 years of, you know, every year we have to have this ready for ATA, and we got to have something that's going to make a splash and all of this different stuff. And then in the middle of July saying, all right, this is when we're going to do it. So how does that decision get made?
It was, and it was a little, I don't want to say it was a risk. I mean, it was it's a risk getting out of bed every morning, but I mean, it was a calculated risk in coming out with a new product basically at the height of busy season, when for the last 18 months we had been running behind, you know, just because, you know, we got shut down for 8 weeks in the spring of 20, you know, winter and spring of 2020. We had to grind right to a halt and then start up from scratch. I mean, we've been fighting tooth and nail just to get caught up. And so it seems kind of almost counterintuitive to launch a new product right when you're still trying to get caught up from the hole that you were in. But we saw, you know, several of our competitors had a product like that, and it was probably one of the easiest projects that we've ever had to engineer, because it was essentially three new parts. It was a new pin and a pin holder, and we had to do a little bit of different machining on one of the components on an existing product. So it's not like we had to start from scratch with a brand new recipe. We were essentially just changing a couple of the ingredients on a current one. So, it made total sense. And I mean, the launch couldn't have gone smoother. I mean, I guess in a perfect world, we would have had 1,000 of them sitting on the shelf for when we pulled the cover off. We had just gotten into production. So, I mean, there was a little bit of a delay from the time that it launched till it came out. But I mean, it was, we did have some product in the pipeline to our dealers before launch date, or I think it was the week of launch. So, kind of a long answer to your question, but it was a pretty easy new product to come out with mid-season that way, and something that we definitely knew that there was going to be a demand for. And I'm glad we did it, because now we were able to, you know, kind of steal some peg space, hopefully, from our competitors going into 2023. So when the trade show season does roll around now and our sales reps start knocking on doors, you know, everybody's going to have familiarity with that Rise site already, and hopefully continue to buy them. So
now, is there trepidation going into the first part of 2023 that you don't have that new product or whatever?
Not really, because I mean, going into 2022, we you know, our Tetra line is still fairly new. I mean, anybody that's been shooting an HHA for a long time knows the Optimizer. I mean, the Optimizer is where it all started back in 1996. The Optimizer is still around, but we came out with the Tetra back in 2018, and then really kind of put a lot of efforts going forward into that a couple years ago. So we feel like there's still a lot of meat on the bone and a lot of freshness with that Tetra line, and continue to, you know, add features here and there. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, whether it's a bow or a sight, I mean, the technology has advanced so much in the last 10 years that it's like, how much more can we really do? How much more change can we really bring? And so it's just kind of just continuing to refine. And so I don't have any fear of not having anything new, just because I know that not everybody probably that wanted the Rise was able to get one, you know, within the last 3-4 months here. So that's essentially it's still a pretty new product for us, even though it's not brand spanking new come January 1.
Okay. And so what does the future hold for HHA, you know, HHA Sports?
Well, we're it's hard to believe. I mean, like I talked earlier, my dad started our company. That was 1984. So, I mean, we're coming up on our 40th anniversary here in another 12 months. We'll be getting ready for a big 40th anniversary celebration. It's crazy that it's been that long. It's the only job that I've ever had. You know, I was working there probably before the child labor laws would let me. So, but as far as the future goes, I mean, we had been making, you know, AeroRest for the last few years. Got back into stabilizers, and for as good as those products were, we felt like they were almost a, I don't want to say a distraction, but I mean, we were, our demands for our sites is just sky high right now. And so we decided to get out of the AeroRest and the stabilizer market going into 2023. So now we're just a site company, so we can focus all of our efforts there. And I mean, we want to be the biggest and the baddest and the best site company on the block. And I think we, you know, our reputation kind of speaks for itself. We're pretty humble guys. We don't like to brag a lot, but we've got a pretty rock solid following, and just looking forward to continue to grow that with more new products on the site side.
And so, you know, it's sometimes tough with a lot of guys that have friends in the industry, and especially with companies or whatever, to be like somewhat unbiased towards your friends and everything like that. But so like, what's your, I mean, I can almost guess your bow setup, like what you're running and everything. But like for this year, when you, shot that deer, what was your bow setup, arrows, all that?
I'm shooting a V3X. So I'm a Matthews guy. And surprisingly, I mean, yeah, we're, you know, I'm an hour and a half from the Matthews factory, but I only started shooting Matthews probably 10 or 12 years ago. And I would historically shoot whatever bows our sales reps would have, just because I wanted to kind of help those guys out. And it, you know, I had opportunities to, not that I needed a discount on a bow, but they're like, hey, we got the new XYZ. Why don't you give one of those a try? So I would get to meet a lot of those manufacturers just through other circles and stuff. So I finally switched to Matthews, you know, 10, 12 years ago, loved their stuff. So yeah, I was shooting a V3X and then, shooting Victory, VAP TKOs. Where was my arrow setup and rage hypodermic two blades. So
okay, and where do you fall in the because I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. It was Joel Maxfield, right? From Matthews. Yeah. He puts out all the information on the arrows and arrow front of center and the efficiencies and all that. So like, what, where do you fall in that? You know, heavy arrow, front of center type stuff. What's the total grain weight, all that?
I'm going to plead my archery ignorance. I do not know my grain weight of my arrows. I'm not that guy. And I was on Aaron Snyder's podcast earlier this summer, and he asked me the same question. And I wasn't about to try to fake it till I make it. I was shooting a regular Victory up until earlier in the summer. And then my sales manager had switched to those TKOs, the weight forward ones. So I decided to switch to those. And the penetration that I've gotten on those arrows has been crazy. Just shooting 3D the last half of the season. And I don't know if it's just that some of the targets were getting wore out, but I was getting better penetration with those arrows than everybody that I was shooting against. And I'm a 30 inch draw, you know, 60 pounds. I'm not shooting at 80 or a 90 pound bow. So, but I do have a fairly long draw length, but been really happy with those arrows. And the funny part on that, well, not funny part, but on that buck that I shot this September, he was broadside at 25 yards. I was 99% sure I was going to get a pass through. I was 6 inches below the back and 4 inches behind the front shoulder. And that deer actually went down right in his tracks. And what had happened is that rage must have hit a rib and it kicked right up in his spinal column and put him down on the spot. So unfortunately I had to get down and give him another arrow, but just the impact of those arrows was pretty impressive to me. One of our shoots that we do, they have a custom, it's a 12 foot tall gorilla target. A guy made it out of plywood. It's got fur on it. He's got a Morel bag target in it. We put it out at 85 yards. I was shooting those VAPs at 85 yards, and those arrows were actually going through that bag. It was a brand new Morel bag target, and it was blowing through them, and I didn't. Felt bad after they're actually having to cut them out. Like I was cutting out my arrows out of this bag target with a pocket knife. And I said, oh, I'm done shooting the novelty target. I don't want to destroy your guys' target on you.
And so for all of those, 3D shoots and everything. Do you have a different bow for target shooting, or is it one bow, your hunting bow for everything?
Yeah, one bow for everything. I had two different V3Xs this summer just because we hadn't quite launched the Rise site yet, so I didn't want to show that off. And I mean, we had shoots in May and June and early July, so I shot the one bow with the single pin on it up until, you know, the weekend after 4th of July, and then we were within about a week of launch, and I think I brought my other bow out at that point with my Rise sight on it. So, but no, I'm not an indoor spot guy. I'm just an archery hunter and a 3D guy, so I like shooting my hunting setup all year. So
awesome. So if guys have questions or whatever, or like, let's say they listen to HHA USA or the podcast, and they are like, you know, I know someone who'd be great on the podcast, or, you know, they want to get in touch with you or something like that. How would somebody go about that?
Yeah. So we've got a website for HHA USA. It's HHAUSA.org. My email's on there. That'll come directly to me. I'm the only guy that checks it. I also run our Instagram and our Facebook page. So if you message either of those, that's going to come right to me as well. So people can track me down there. And then our podcast is on there as well. And it's on other, you know, other platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can find it there. So.
Okay. And then I would assume that that's where all the information is disseminated for all the shoots and any of the other things that you've got going on.
Yep. I kind of put the cart in front of the horse a little bit. I was just anxious to kind of get the schedule out there. So the 2022 schedule is still on the website. That will be updated here, not before Thanksgiving, but probably within the next, but before Christmas for sure, our entire 2023 shoot lineup will be up on the website. And one thing I'm kind of going back and forth with, I think we might push to strictly online registration this year, but yeah, people will be able to start getting shoot tickets for those events coming up in 2023. That's going to be here before we know it. So.
Well, awesome, Chris. I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, sit down and chat with me this morning. And we look forward to, making it out to one of those events this year. We had talked about it previously, but I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll get to meet you in person.
I love it. I love it. I'm looking forward to it, brother. I appreciate it. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Yep. You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
These casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawks Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.